I'm absolutely delighted that Peter managed to jump into the fray and volunteered to fill the gap with a presentation that some have heard before, but it's the most entertaining presentation. Most of you do know Peter, so I don't think that requires any further introductions. But please put your hands together and thank you, Peter, for coming to tell us about Able Seaman Just Nuisance Royal Navy.
Yes. Thanks, Joe. And is this working? It sounds like it. And yeah, apologies. I certainly won't be able to compete with someone like Chris Pugsley, but hopefully this will be a warm, fuzzy type of talk. So this is a story about a unique able seaman in World War II. The story is set in Cape Town, which is southernmost tip of the of Africa. And it's a rather interesting situation, because when I was a youngster in Cape Town and I had a little compass and I looked out to sea and I thought, the compass is pointing north, but the mountains behind me, something's wrong here. And the reason it was pointing north is because actually Cape Town is on the end over here on a peninsula, and the mountains are behind, and north is this way, but all you could see was the ocean, because this is quite a big bay. So it's certainly an interesting geographical situation. Also, behind that it's on a peninsula, and you have Devil's Peak, Table Mountain, Lion's Head and Signal Hill, and then behind it you have a row of called the 12 Apostles. Just as a matter of interest, back in the 50s, a New Zealander priest came out to Cape Town, and he said, well, we've got Table Mountain, we've got the 12 Apostles, and you've got the Devil's Peak. We should really christen this Christmas Peak. He didn't win on that subject. The other thing is that there's a railway which goes from Cape Town down through the southern suburbs and then into a bay here called False Bay, and then down to Simonstown, which is really where this story takes place. So Simonstown was named after one of the earlier governors, Simon van der Stil, and as I said, it's enclosed in a false bay, there's some very nice beaches coming down, there's a naval dockyard up here, and then you come down and you've got these beaches as you head down. There's a picture of the naval dockyard, and another one sort of looking up from the mountain. So there's a lovely little beach called Froggy Pond, and at Froggy Pond there was a naval barracks, and the naval barracks is where this particular able seaman lived. That's Admiralty House, which was built in 1740 and became the residence of the CNC South Atlantic in 1814, and it was handed over to South Africa in 1957, and it's now part of the South African Maritime Museum. Now, the barracks at Froggy Pond was a stone frigate, HMS Afrikaner, and the commander of the barracks was a chap by the name of Shakespeare, but slightly different spelling to the bard, but there is a similarity. The bard, Shakespeare, was a dog lover, because after all he wrote about Hamlet, who was a Great Dane, and our story is about a Great Dane. So a better opening slide should really be a true sea dog who led a dog's life, and able seaman just nuisance. So the story begins in 1st of April 1937. The dog by the name of Pride was born and bred by a Mr. Bosman, and his parents, he was a pedigree. Sire was Kunin, dame was Diana, and Mr. Benjamin Cheney bought him when he was 11 months old. Mr. Cheney had had a bull mastiff which died, and he wanted to replace it. And when he saw the dog, he was actually quite surprised at the size of the dog. But he was a very happy dog, and he kept on wagging his tail, and the tail kept on knocking against things, and so he had a constant sore at the end of the tail. He brought his brought the dog home, and he introduced him to his wife, and his wife said, "Well, okay, we'll give him a little bit of meat." So she cut some meat off from a leg of mutton in the fridge. And she said to the dog, "If you can open this fridge, you can have this leg of mutton." They came down the next morning, the fridge was open, and the bone was picked clean. Mr. Cheney became in charge of the United Services Institute, which was a place for service people where they could rest and sort of have some recreation. And he took the dog with him, and the dog became a huge popular attraction to the various service people. But because it was a naval dockyard, in particular, it was the Navy service people, the sailors, who petted him and took him for walks and gave him tidbits and so on. Now, when I say a big dog, I mean a big dog. So much so that, as I said, he lived in the barracks at Froggy Pond, and he slept inside. And a new young rating from Britain had arrived, and he was in the barracks. And during the course of the night, the dog came in. The rating gave a scream because he thought that the barracks was there was a lion that had entered the barracks. Anyway, he befriended the sailors. He would join them on their trips into Cape Town. He'd hop up onto the South African Railway's southern suburbs trip, which I showed you, the railway line, and he'd occupy the whole seat of one of the carriages on inside. He'd take the company of the sailors into town. He'd join them when they went out, sort of going night clubbing and drinking and that sort of thing, and then he'd accompany them back home and sort of help them if they were a little bit won over the eight and couldn't quite find the train. He'd grab them by the cuff and pull them along. The train conductors were not very happy about this dog occupying their carriages without having had a ticket. So there were times when they tried to push him off and shove him right back onto the station. And if they succeeded, because he was a big dog and he didn't quite like being pushed off, but if they did succeed, he'd simply wait there for another train to come along, and he'd hop onto that train. It eventually got so bad that they went along to Mr. Cheney and said, "Look, if you don't do something about this, we're going to have the dog put down." And Mr. Cheney, by this time, had realised that nobody was going to be master of the dog. And by now, he'd been quite well known by the people of Cape Town, because he hopped on the train, went in with the sailors, joined them, went back to Simonstown, and there was quite an outcry. And so they wrote to the Admiralty and and said, "We can't have our dog taken down." And the CNC, South Atlantic, received all these letters, and so he used his prerogative and said, "Very well, This dog has actually been accompanying and helping our sailors for the last 9 months already. We'll simply enlist him into the Navy. So he became enlisted. Because he was always knocking into things and would climb up in the way and sailors would fall over him, they'd say, "Oh, what a nuisance." And someone would say, "Whose dog is that?" And they'd say, "Oh, that's just nuisance." And so that's how the name stuck. So his surname was Nuisance. The Christian name, they called him Just. The port division was Snooky. Snook being an Afrikaans term for a barracuda, and so they thought we'll call him Snooky. The trade, they said, was a bone crusher, and his religion was scrounger. And he was officially enlisted. They said, "We'll make him a seaman," and then they said, no, he's actually already been well involved with the Navy. We'll make him an able seaman. That way he's actually entitled to free rations. And he also is entitled now to travel on the train without having to have a ticket. All he's got to do is have some form of identity. So they put an identity disc on his collar, and he was allowed to to travel on the railway. One of his favourite cruises was HMS Neptune, and there's a little bit of a tie-up here with New Zealand and the story, because Neptune hit a mine in 1941 and sank, and many of you will know that there were a good number of New Zealanders on board HMS Neptune. But he'd come and visit Neptune, he'd go up on the gangplank and he'd lie down, and he'd occupy him by, of course, the whole gangplank, and they'd have to step over him and say, "Oh, just nuisance." Anyway, and everybody, as I say, he particularly, the naval ratings loved him, but he also really was devoted more to those who had the square rig type of uniform rather than the fore and aft uniform of an officer or petty officer. A few of his exploits. He went AWOL for 3 weeks. What had happened was a couple of sailors had got leave, and they were going up to 400 miles or so north. He accompanied one. They bivouacked billeted at a farmhouse. And then they were going to keep going northwards, and they said, "Well, this dog's followed us." And the farmer said, not to worry, I've got to head into Cape Town, and he can come with me." But the next morning the dog was gone, and it took 3 weeks. The dog was missing. They thought, well, he's disappeared. But he eventually did turn up looking rather skinny and a bit worse for wear, but he'd travelled that 400 miles back down to Cape Town. He also would have joined the sailors when they were involved with recreation at official recreations, and there'd be music hall and dances at the Cape Town City Hall, and some of the waitresses would then dance with the sailors and sort of in between their duties. And one by the name of Gertie Baker, who reported sometime later to the newspaper, she went up to Nuisance and said, "Would you like to dance?" Much to her surprise, the dog stood up, put his paws on her shoulder, and they waltzed around. She said, "I was 5'2", he was 6'7". But anyway, one cold Saturday night, a taxi driver by the name of Jan van Tonder was in Cape Town waiting to see whether he might get a late night fare. And he was sort of dozing in his cab, and he's woken up to hear a dog barking, and looked out, and he was a little bit anxious. He saw this huge dog, And then he realized it was nuisance. And then he became a bit concerned because nuisance was behaving a bit strangely. He'd bark and then go off to an alleyway, come back, bark again, go back to the alleyway. So he got out of his taxi and went along and into the alley, and then he found a sailor who had been stabbed and was unconscious, lying in the road. They called an ambulance. The ambulance arrived. They loaded the sailor in. Just Nuisance jumped in with the sailor. The ambulance attendants wisely decided to leave him in the ambulance. And they went off to hospital, and he accompanied the sailor to hospital, and once he was satisfied that the sailor was in safe hands, he left and he went back to barracks. He was adopted by some other navies as well, so there you can see HMAS Canberra. He was eventually excused having to wear caps because he wasn't all that fond of walking around with a cap. That's his collar, and it's currently in the Maritime Museum at Simonstown. Just Nuisance, AB, HMS Afrikaan at Simonstown, and his rail warrant was attached to that. His fame spread around the world, and that picture there on the left is a able seaman Ray Stubbs with Nuisance. He had that picture. His destroyer, Encounter, was sunk in Sumatra, Pacific, and he was taken prisoner of war. And he kept that picture with him, carefully hidden so that it wouldn't be found by the enemy, by the Japanese. And a couple of photographs of his friends, from both young and older. His service was, his record wasn't unblemished, however, and he was brought up before the commanding officer on a couple of charges. He had the master at arms reading out the charge sheet, and he had an escort, there were three charges in particular. One is that he did travel on a train without having his ticket with him, with his rail warrant. And did you plead guilty or not guilty? And the escort said, guilty but with extenuating circumstances, sir. The other thing was that he'd appropriated a bed in the petty officer's dormitory, and he did sleep in that bed with illegally, because he should have been with the ratings. And the third charge was that he resisted being removed from an establishment. Anyway, then was listening to the charges. The Nuisance got a wee bit tired and bored with this, and so sank down, and the escort had to try and pull him up. And so there was a little bit of a kerfuffle at first. Nuisance knocked his head against the desk. His cap fell off, and the CO said, "Oh, yeah, Master, you actually forgot to give the order, remove caps before the charges were read off, so please remove them now." Master at Arms got really quite flustered with this. Anyway, once that was over, he said, "Well, okay, on the first charge, that is of travelling without a rail warrant, yes, I find you guilty, but the extenuating circumstances are that you really didn't realise you were doing wrong. So the fine is 7 days confined to barracks, all lampposts removed." On the second charge, sleeping in the bed in the petty officer's dorm, "Yes, I find you guilty, and the charge is 7 days deprived of bones." At least the fine is 7 days deprived of bones. But the extenuating circumstances are that the petty officer was drunk, you accompanied him into this dormitory, and you were worried about him, so you stayed with him until you were satisfied he was okay, so the sentence has been suspended. And on the third charge, where you resisted being removed from an establishment, it was actually self-defense, because you were being physically attacked and confronted by the person trying to remove you, and I will not have any of my people under my command being attacked and abused. So, not guilty on that charge. There was one occasion, though, when he met his match, and that was he was visiting a merchant vessel, merchant navy vessel, and went on board, went to a cabin, and there was a parrot, parrot cage, and the parrot cage was covered with a towel, a blanket, and when they removed the blanket, the parrot suddenly started letting off a number of expletives, and the dog was so shaken by this that he turned tail and ran. He also became very interested in flying. There's a airfield in near town, near Cape Town, called Wingfield, and that was Royal Navy Air Service, the Fleet Air Arm that occupied part of that, and Nuisance would go and visit there because there was also a swimming pool, and there were sort of some amenities around. So there he is wearing an Air Force cap, and sailors being what they are, they tried to say, I wonder what it'll be like if he gets onto an aircraft. So they eventually tried to smuggle him, or they did, they smuggled him on board an aircraft, an albacore, which was doing anti-submarine patrols, and he thoroughly enjoyed it. He was fascinated by sitting there looking down at what was going on. And they flew over a convoy of ships that was approaching, and they had to fly fairly down to low down to signal to the ships, and they then got a Aldous lamp flashing back at them, and the message was, at what date did the Royal Navy employ animals as air crew? And they thought, oh, now we're for it. So a little bit of talking, and then they signaled back and said, oh, no, not an animal, it's actually our mascot. It's a great big mascot. Little pause, and the signal came back and said, my mistake, there was obviously a smudge on my binoculars. No, I didn't see an animal. I showed you Signal Hill earlier on, and at the top of Signal Hill, since 1808, there've been two Dutch cannon, and they are set to fire off at noonday. It's the noonday gun. So at 12 o'clock midday, boom, you hear one of these cannons firing, and everyone knows then that it's noon, if you haven't got a watch. During the war, there was when the noonday gun went off, there was a moment of 1 minute silence. Everybody stopped what they were doing and had 1 minute silence in remembering those who had fallen during the war. And so there they are, noonday guns gone off, and people are standing. And Nuisance was an extremely patriotic dog. If the God Save the King was played, he'd sit up and listen, and sometimes he'd try and bark and join in with the music. But he also observed the 1 minute silence, and if somebody decided that he wasn't going to move or stand at attention and moved in and he ignored it, Nuisance would run down and stand in front of him and bark until the miscreant would actually stop and observe the silence. They say every sailor has a wife in port, in every port, and so they also then thought it was time that Nuisance sired a couple of offspring, and he met they arranged for him to meet with a pedigree bitch called Adinda, and they were officially spliced and tied at a ceremony at the Cape Town City Hall, and two pups were born, and the pups were then auctioned off for war for funds to support the war cause. And he did enjoy sleeping on a bed rather than on a mat. But as time went by, being a big dog and having had several injuries, he'd fallen off a couple of trucks, he started to develop a bit of a paralysis and limp, and he was admitted sometimes to the Naval Hospital, and it won't do it. But take note of the medication nearby. In fact, he was very fond of beer, and he could put away a good quantity. Not terribly good for the dog, but certainly caused much mirth with the sailors. And he managed to hold his liquor as well. Anyway, time went by, and his limp got worse and worse, and eventually, there was nothing more that I could do. His paralysis had set in, and so he was euthanized and put out of his misery because he could no longer walk around. A message went out right across the whole of the Royal Navy advising everyone of Nuisance's death and demise, and there was certainly not a dry eye in sight. He was buried with full military honours under a white ensign, and at a place called Clavo, which overlooks the Simonstown dockyard. And he's got a tombstone: Great Dane Just Nuisance, able seaman, HMS Africana, 1940-44, and he's buried alongside a walkway so that passers-by can stop and pay their respects. But that's not quite the end of the story. His name lives on, and a woman by the name of Jean Doyle fashioned a sculpture of him, and so there he is in Simonstown. Handsome-looking animal with his cap and collar. Nothing is sacred. A few years ago, somebody stole the cap and the collar. But subsequently, I understand it's been replaced. And that's the plaque that's next to his statue. Loyal friend and companion of the sailors who called at this port during World War II. Remembered with affection. But his name lives on, and every year there is now a Just Nuisance Market and charity drive, and there's a parade through the town with a Just Nuisance lookalike, and there are competitions for who is the most lookalike Just Nuisance. And being the new South Africa, colour doesn't matter, so you can have a black one. And there's also a competition for the most unjust nuisance type of dog. Some enterprising person has also ended up producing some wines, Just Nuisance wines. So, a dog that won the hearts of many, people have tried to emulate him, copy him, bring other dogs to do the same thing again. They have not been able to do it. There's only one Just Nuisance. There's been nobody who can replace him. And I'm only a good Dane, not a great Dane.
Thanks, Peter.
Right.
I'm sure there must be some questions that some of you I'll kick off with a question. On his statement of service, there was a qualification there. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
The bone crusher.
No. Was it a swabbing qualification or on a statement of service? I saw something there, and I thought, what's the relevance of that? There you go. Down here.
Yes, that's right here. I forgot about that. Yes, he actually one day pushed a Commodore into the swimming pool.
I see. So that was PPT.
I don't know what
physical training or
probably some sort. Yeah.
Of an aquatic variety.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Quite an interesting character. I don't know whether has there been anything similar in the New Zealand Navy, RNC?
No, I mean there've been mascots, but this is the one and only dog that has actually been officially enlisted.
Right.
I've got two little books there about his story, and a license holder in South Africa. The license discs are round, and they held on the windscreen with the license holder.
any other questions? What about other mascot tales? Has anybody got any tales of military mascots or the like? Yes, Truby King. The first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, I think it was. Yep. That was the engineer unit, and Petone had a goat. I remember that well because during the period I was the custodian of the goat, but it gave me a vehicle. Because that was the only way of carrying the bloody thing around. Everywhere we went, the goat travelled at the back of the Land Rover, but it always used to rub its head up against its backside up against your head. And that's the only reason why I've actually got hair off the back of my head, because the rest of it disappeared.
There was also a mascot in the South African infantry in World War I, and he was a baboon. And he actually wore a uniform.
We adopted a mascot in another engineer unit up in Papakura. Corporal Wiley Coyote, to the point, well, he came on board as a sapper, private cuddler, and then was promoted over a number of years. And he eventually ended up on the unit nominal role, and he was rostered for orderly corporal, and I can always remember standing outside the squadron sergeant major's office when the camp RSM, Jack Cock, rang up and said, "Where's this Corporal Coyote? He's supposed to be here on duty. He hasn't turned up for duty. You know what the consequences are." And poor old Jack, when he realised that, he was rather a grumpy RSM, wasn't he? He reacted quite volatile. Any other tales?
When I was in UK, one of the airborne sergeant majors, a pretty tough guy, he was serving at SME, and a dog bit him.
And a dog bit him?
Bit him in the leg.
Oh, right.
Everybody was scared of rabies. You see, he didn't die of rabies. The newspaper heading was "Dog Bite Man, Dog Dies."
Peter, any idea about how much he ate today? And that, did they have him listed in mess?
No, I don't know that, sorry. It would have been considerable, but he was fed very well by the messes and the cooks and so on.
I was ASC with mess, what was going out each day, and it went through my mind of seeing all the tinned food lined up on the other side.
They constructed a way of siphoning off some of the rations so that it was all legal and above board.
But I mean, with a size like that, the daily consumption would have been huge.
Indeed,
for 7 years.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, we won't drag this out. Thank you very, very much again, Peter. I've just got some other bits of information which I'll pass on, but please join me in thanking Peter again. And also for jumping into the breach when poor old Chris had to pull out at the last moment.